This Washington Post Live podcast is supported by Kaiser Permanente, where members can see a doctor, get a lab test, and pick up medication all in one connected system, delivering healthy outcomes and consistent care. More at kp.org/betterforbusiness.
You're listening to a podcast from Washington Post Live, bringing the Post's newsroom to life on stage. On Thursday, November 1st, National Economic Council Director Larry Kudlow and Blue Mercury CEO Marla Beck joined policymakers and entrepreneurs at the Washington Post to discuss opportunities and challenges for small businesses in the United States. In this segment, small business owners and advocates discuss the realities of owning and sustaining a successful enterprise in today's economic climate and practical solutions to common problems these businesses face as they grow. Let's listen.
Good morning. My name is Heather Long, and I'm an economics correspondent here at the Washington Post. We're excited to continue this discussion about small business with two actual small business owners and two others who are on the front lines of setting small business policy in this country. So I'll start by introducing our great panel. Just to my left here is Tom Sullivan, the Vice President of Small Business Policy at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Next to him is Mallory Shelter, a small business owner who just 6 weeks ago opened a store here in Washington, D.C. called Shelter. It's a wonderful jewelry store in the Union Market area of the city. She's been a creator and designer of jewelry for several years and finally took the plunge to open the business. In a brick and mortar context. Next to her is Gary Williams, a creator and photographer. He's co-founder of Creative Theory, a social consulting and content creation firm that he started with a partner in 2015. We're excited to have you here, and you already won Best Shoes.
Hey, come on.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
It's a competition. Yeah, we'll vote later. And last but certainly not least is Alan Gutierrez, an associate administrator for the Office of Entrepreneurial Development at the U.S. Small Business Administration. And he's been traveling the country, speaking to small business owners, and working to help launch small businesses in this country. So I thought I'd kick it off by asking each of you to reflect a little bit about why we don't have more small businesses in this country. What people may not know is small business creation and new business creation is actually at a 30-year low in the United States right now. It fell pretty sharply during the recession, and it just hasn't bounced back, which has really baffled many people. And there's a lot of theories about why it is that we aren't seeing more new business formation in the United States. So I'd like to start, maybe Mallory will start with you since it's so fresh. You just started a business. You are bucking the trend. What was the one or two big hurdles for you to really get going?
Yeah. Well, I was running my business online for a very long time, so it was just me. And we were speaking earlier about, you know, going to a physical location is a much different beast to deal with. And I would say, you know, definitely access to capital was a huge hurdle for me. I didn't even need that much of it, but.
So are we talking like 10,000 to 50,000?
No, a little more.
A little more, okay.
You know, that was really difficult because you have to cover the build out and inventory buying and, you know, a lot of upfront costs to get that started. And I think a lot of people just don't have access to that. I was very lucky that I was able to get a business loan, but I think that that's historically been hard for people. And then finding talent, I really struggled with as well. You know, having people who are, you know, willing to work in a small business and go through all of those ups and downs that come with working for a small business and be the jack of all trades. You know, it at times can, I feel like there's sometimes a little payoff for it. And I think just finding the right people to work with, that's been a struggle. I'm lucky that I now have people, but that was definitely a struggle for me.
And how many people have you hired just in the last few weeks?
Seven.
Wow, okay. Yeah. true job creation in the city.
They're all fantastic. Thank you.
I forgot to say that you can tweet us questions from the audience here or online. All you have to do is use the hashtag postlive, one word, postlive, and we'll throw some of those at the panel later on. Gary, what about you? What was some of the hurdles, big hurdles for you?
For us, it's different. Obviously, we're a creative consulting company and creation service, so we don't really need capital in a sense. We don't need a brick and mortar. We don't need a storefront. We needed an office space. And for us, that's not a heavy lift as much as raising the capital you need to start a brick and mortar. So I think for us, the main hurdle was the paperwork and starting an LLC and getting all that done and then getting a good accountant. And things of that nature. And a lot of creatives that we talk to in our industry, it's a daunting task, right? They don't necessarily feel like they can do it or have the bandwidth to do it or know the right people who can lead them the right way as far as accounting and getting your paperwork legit. So for us, it wasn't necessarily a hurdle. It was just to buckle down and let's do the right things we need to do to make this official business and then take it one step at a time from there.
And where did you get that help from? Was that from friends or from
Yeah, so my business partner and I have been working in the industry before we were even together in business for a while. And so we've made great relationships across the board. And so we just reached out to our network. We have a huge network here in DC, one being Edens, which is a very big developer, one of our clients. And they are amazing and have been a great source for us. If we need something and they can't, you know, provide it, they know somebody who can. And so we just tapped our resources. Again, which a lot of creatives don't have those resources. We were fortunate enough to know people that could help us out.
Tom, let's throw it to you. What one or two policy changes, maybe at either the state level or at the federal level, do you think could really jumpstart business creation in the United States again?
Well, I think, first of all, Heather, you know, we're seeing record-breaking confidence in small business. Mm-hmm. So we run a quarterly survey of 1,000 small business owners. And for six consecutive quarters, they have said that they are confident with the economy. And so as far as reversing a 30-year trend of declining entrepreneurship, we believe that confidence breeds more folks like Mallory and like Gary who want to plunge into entrepreneurship. So we're very optimistic, kind of like most small business owners. And we think that the reason for this confidence are a lot of the things that Larry Kudlow just talked about. And those are pro-growth policies like tax cuts, regulatory reform, and others. So as much as we can have the policy wind at entrepreneurs' backs, I think we will see a reverse in the decline of entrepreneurship.
Great. And what about those paperwork or capital concerns? Are you hearing that a lot when you go around the country? Is that still a big hurdle for a lot of potential new business owners?
We are, except it's lower on the concern list than it has been. I think Larry had mentioned NFIB and the work that they do to survey small businesses. They had said that tax compliance and tax burden for the first time in over 30 years has fallen off the top five issues of concern. So they're still there, regulatory, paperwork, tax compliance. It's just they're lower on the concern list that they used to be. Hiring employees is now number one. And so we've got a lot of small businesses from around the country that are jealous of Mallory who can hire seven people in 6 weeks.
Uh-huh. Alan, what about you? What do you think some of the best policies the Trump administration has done so far to try to reverse this 30-year trend?
No, certainly. First of all, I'd like to say today is the start of National Entrepreneurship Month. So, you know, happy birthday to all those entrepreneurs out there. Certainly, that's what is the engine, you know, of this economy, from starting having an idea and growing it to fruition, like Mallory and Gary. I would say that, you know, one of the things that Administrator Linda McMahon has been on her Ignite tour, and one of the things that she has been recognizing and looking at, getting all the feedback from the different entrepreneurs and business owners of what is really helping them. In terms of the feedback that we're getting is that, you know, obviously, like Tom was saying, you know, the less tax regulations, the opportunity to be able to be able to then use those additional funds to be able to potentially hire new individuals or to potentially buy new machinery that will take you to the next level. One example would be a gentleman down in Miami that had mentioned, you know, he has a brewery company, and he's like, look, with this tax cuts, I'm able to buy an additional machinery that will be help me in providing more of my brewery, but also in return also to bring more employees on board as well. Those are the things that we're hearing out there in that aspect that are refreshing and good. I think that, like Tom had mentioned, that the confidence level, with the confidence level, certainly there's an opportunity to take a little bit more of a risk, right, factor in that aspect. So what we say, and we would like to say from SBA, we're here to help. We're here to help you start, grow, and expand your business. And that's one of the main things that, one of the many things that we're doing at SBA under the leadership of Administrator McMahon.
And what's your top priority for 2019? It seems like a lot of things, confidence is up, but what else are you aiming to do and hoping to do in the coming months?
Sure. A couple of things that we're looking at, certainly we recognize the opportunity to expand even more in rural America, mm-hmm. to really to provide those tools and services. Recent examples that we have done is, for example, our new MOU with the USDA, Department of Agriculture, and how we can maximize each other's resources to be able to reach out to the entrepreneurs and small businesses in rural America. Also looking at workforce development, too. What are the things that we're going to be rolling out in the near future that will work in a private-private partnership? Partnership in that aspect of working with colleges and private sectors. And I know the president yesterday mentioned about additional working more with private sector and their role as well in terms of workforce development, but also how we can work together as a team.
Hmm. Let's stay on taxes for a second. Gary, you've owned your business for a couple years now. Have you felt the tax changes at all?
Again, for us, it's different. We definitely have, but I don't think on the scale that most larger business or maybe Mallory feels. So for us, and we have a really good accountant.
Same. It's key.
Yeah, it's key. So for us, we've been able to make adjustments and kind of, I don't say fight off, but, you know, just make adjustments necessary to withstand those policy changes. And so it hasn't been a very huge factor for us. But again, we are in the very infancy stages of our business. And I imagine as we scale, mm-hmm. these will become larger issues for us, and we'll be reaching out to one of these guys to help us.
Does it enable you to do anything? I don't know, buy new machines or buy a new camera?
Yeah. Always. We do buy equipment. We try to stay up to date. As you know, this is a very technology-driven field, and so if you don't have the latest equipment, you're kind of behind. And so for us, we try to renew our equipment yearly. And there are incentives for that as far as tax breaks and things like that, putting the money back into the business. And so we do feel a relief there.
What about you, Mallory? Was that at all a factor as you look to expand?
It's definitely something I take into consideration. You know, I've been lucky to have a profit in my business, but, you know, seeing that money be put aside for taxes can hurt sometimes. So,
yes.
You know, I wouldn't say that I feel it as much, but it's definitely something that I am constantly thinking about, because every time, you know, you're not getting a paycheck from another person and that's automatically taken out. I have to account for my employee taxes and my income tax and my sales tax and all of those things that I need to pull from my business every month to pay. So it's very much top of mind.
Tom, do we need another tax cut? The president has floated the idea that maybe he would like to do another, and I think he said 10% for the middle class. Some of that could be for small business owners. Is that needed, or have we done enough to really stimulate the economy?
Well, the lens we always look through at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is growth.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see growth happening right now with the tax cuts that happened around Christmas time last year, and we have yet to see whether or not additional tax cuts are required to keep the 3% growth going in the economy. There are a couple of things, though, that are important in the small business tax world. A lot of these incentives that Gary and Mallory talked about, they might be going away after 2025. And so the House passed legislation that would make those permanent. We had several hundred small businesses here for our summit just last month, the first week of October. And many of them went to Capitol Hill, and they asked Congress, make those tax cuts permanent. And so I'm not sure if that meets the definition of additional tax cuts, but it's certainly a priority for the small businesses we talk with.
And you really think that would be a game changer to make those permanent?
I think so. I mean, like many folks, small business owners would like to have the luxury of planning multiple years ahead. So when they're making investment decisions on whether they want to grow their storefront or expand their technology, they want to be able to look past next month. They want to look past next year. And the ability for them to plan past 2025 and count on certain parts of the tax code changes is very important.
I'd like to turn to healthcare. I'm actually surprised nobody's mentioned it yet. That seems to be, when I go around the country, something that a lot of people want to talk about who are small business owners, or even if they're not, about costs rising. Mallory, maybe we'll start with you. How are you handling healthcare costs?
Well, I'm lucky that I can get it through my husband's company, because I truly don't know what I would do if that weren't the case. It's something I think about a lot to provide to my employees, and it's a huge financial burden to me. So right now I have part-time employees, and I don't provide that to them. But, you know, to retain talent and to get new people to work for you, I think it's something that I have considered offering. And it's one of those things I don't even know where to start on.
You mean, yes, to who to go to ask?
Who to go to ask?
This,
yeah,
what are my options?
Exactly.
Gary, what are you all doing?
So I'm fortunate to be on my wife's healthcare. I mean, that's the nature of the business, right? It's so, obviously, like I talk about scale, we are still in the infancy stage of our business, but scaling, that will be something that we'll have to tackle. Obviously, we want to be able to provide health care for our employees when the time comes. But when you look at all of that entails, like, it's daunting, it's expensive. But again, I'm fortunate to be on my wife's. And even when I didn't have this business, I was working for myself as an entrepreneur. It's expensive, you know. It says it's Affordable Health Care Act, and I was affording it, but at a cost. You know, it was expensive, and so a lot of times I would get paid, and a majority of the chunk of that would go to my health care. And we're not even talking about great health care; we're just talking about bare minimum health care, right? And so when you talk about health care, there's a difference between health care and then good health care. And obviously, when we scale and we grow our business, we want to provide good health care for our employees. I don't know where to start, like Mallory says, but when that time comes, again, I will be looking to these guys to help. But that will be an important task for us when that time comes.
Alan, what's your take on this? What are some of the initiatives at SBA to try to make things more affordable?
You know, I would say that certainly the president's been a true champion for small business, and we see it every day in terms of not only from less regulation, but also the tackling of the healthcare challenge. For me, I used to be in corporate and in the healthcare industry, and I remember those days where, you know, you have your clients that would have an increase of maybe 2-3% on their renewal. And that was kind of like Tom mentioned, you know, small business wants to forecast and see where it is for next year, you know, budgets and planning and so forth. But these recent years have been spiked so much that it really has affected the bottom line for small business, and also affecting in terms of the type of plans. And I think from the leadership of the president, certainly with the association health plans, is something that will really help in that aspect of really pulling small businesses together and that opportunity to lower that opportunity and keep the benefits at an optimum level. So from us, from SBA, we don't present the policy from that standpoint, but certainly we do hear that, and Administrator McMahon does hear that healthcare is also, you know, they tell us, great on less regulation, less burden, less paperwork, but healthcare is still a big challenge for us, and certainly looking at these areas in terms of the association health plans, I think, is a right step in the right direction.
Now, a lot of people may not know what an association health plan is. Could you just say just a minute on?
Sure. Well, just real quickly, in terms of it, you know, you as a small business, a carrier goes in and goes for a health insurance plan, the risk and is going to be affiliated only with his pool of employees. So let's say 10 employees, right? But if you put all together, all of us have each an individual business, and we have 10 employees together, we come together as a plan, and then there's an ability for the healthcare industry to give you a plan to all of us that spreads the risk, right? So it lowers the cost and that opportunity. And that's what, you know, is beneficial for a small business owner, because then they're able to forecast and realize that it's not going to be such a burdensome on their bottom line approach.
And this is I'll let you jump in a second, but I just want to point out that it is controversial. Yeah. Several states are suing the administration over this change. Some states don't allow these types of plans. And what Gary was speaking of earlier, one of the big concerns is that some of these plans may not offer what's considered good health care, or what's considered a federally acceptable level of health care. So, you know, this is very much fresh in the debate right now, so I'm glad you brought it up. Tom, jump in.
Thank you. The U.S. Chamber is really, really excited about association health plans, because we work with 1,600 state and local chambers of commerce. And as recently as this month and last month, they have been offering association health plans to their small business members. So Las Vegas Metro Chamber of Commerce was one of the first in. Then other chambers in Nevada jumped in. Lubbock, Texas, mm-hmm. just went online with their association health plans. Just yesterday, we saw a group of chambers of commerce in North Texas mm-hmm. that are offering association health plans. And even the National Association of Realtors, which represents 1.3 million realtors, is looking at an association health plan.
And how do you all respond to that big criticism that what would be offered under those plans is not acceptable? It's not, doesn't meet the federal requirements. Maybe things like mental health or pregnancy even may not be covered.
Well, unfortunately, Heather, we think that the rhetoric about that is part of fake news. We actually believe that Secretary Acosta crafted the association health plan rule in a way that make sure that all the protections under the Affordable Care Act extend to the association health plans. He was very careful in writing it that way, and so the discussion about skimpy plans, pre-existing conditions, all those things, we unfortunately think that those aren't accurate, and also believe that if you follow the models that are happening in these state and local chambers of commerce and you talk with them about the offerings, you'll actually find out that this is an exciting opportunity to help provide guidance to folks like Gary and Mallory.
I think that's what's tricky, is that they become so many different plans.
Right.
So you're trying to navigate. It could be very different from mm-hmm. one community to the next mm-hmm. in terms of what's being offered. But it's certainly a hot issue, and we'll see how it evolves, particularly in the courts. I mm-hmm. think that's a big question mark. If you're a small business owner, do you join this right now? Join one of these plans when it could be challenged legally or overturned? We'll see what happens next year. Let's turn to hiring. Everybody's been very excited that Mallory's added some new employees. I know Gary works with a number of contractors on different projects you were saying that you're engaged in. Everybody's telling us it's super hard to find workers now. How'd you do it?
Instagram.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's a challenge. I mean, in D.C. in particular, I've struggled because I don't, you know, Tom and I were talking earlier, and I don't think there's that creative economy that's as strong as other larger cities. And then again, I'm offering a part-time retail position, which isn't always the most glamorous. So, you know, I've been fortunate to find people. I have a lot of people who, you know, are working this in addition to other jobs to either maintain their lifestyle and be able to afford to live in D.C. or because they're looking for a creative outlet on top of a 9-to-5 job that maybe isn't providing that. You know, so I've been fortunate to find those people, but it's, you know, I am always fearful that someone will leave or I'll be short-staffed. So it's something that, you know, is on my mind pretty much every day.
And what about wages? How, you know, D.C. is an expensive city. We see other companies, Amazons, even the Walmarts of the world, raising their pay. Is it difficult for a small business owner like you to compete with that? How do you set wages?
It is. It's one of the things that I can do to maintain talent. Mm-hmm. So I pay more than the minimum wage because I think that that's fair. And I mm-hmm. also acknowledge that, you know, D.C. is an incredibly expensive place to live. And I'm lucky that I'm able to do that. But again, it's, you know, that comes out of my bottom line of costs. It's a huge expense. Every 2 weeks when I go to run payroll, it's a big expense for me. But, you know, I also want to be fair with with the women who work for me. So.
Yeah. Do you have any concerns? Larry Kudlow and the panel before was asked about raising the minimum wage, raising the federal minimum wage, which has been at $7.25 an hour for many years now, over a decade. Is there a concern that you would have if it went to a certain level? A lot of people pushing for $15. Would that make any difference to you?
That's what I pay right now.
Okay, so you think it's doable?
Yes.
Ellen, what about you? This whole debate, should the if the minimum wage goes up, can the economy handle that?
Well, I'll leave that to another division of our executive branch to get back to you on that. But I would say, from a standpoint, what we're seeing, and I mentioned about our leader, a great leader and champion, Administrator McMahon, she's already been in less than a year already has visited 44 states, and meeting with all entrepreneurs and small businesses, and that has been a reoccurring that we've been hearing. You know, access and opportunity to hire more. I mean, in a way a good problem to have, as opposed to, you know, we have a lower unemployment rate, a lowest in the Hispanic community, lowest in the African American community. But what can we do to really be there as an agency, as SBA, to assist? And that's what I mentioned in terms of looking at in the upcoming year some of the initiatives that we're looking at potentially for workforce development and partnerships that we really recognize in looking at not only urban but also rural that will offset. And we're looking forward to announcing that very soon.
And would you say that's the number one issue you're hearing, is this trouble finding workers?
It's at the top, like Tom mentioned. You know, now you got less, you know, less regulation, less cost per employee in a good direction, right? We're not there yet. It's our cost around $10,000 per employee in the small business, where a larger employer can absorb that, right? So we always want it, the lower the better. But I would say that that area in terms of workforce development is key for us in that aspect.
And can you give us a hint of what's coming? Is it more physical centers on the ground or more?
Well, I would say part of it, like through my division in entrepreneur development office, is looking at maximizing our three lanes, our resource partners that I have that are external, and also looking at extending new partnerships and new strategic alliances, as mentioned in the past, with colleges and private sector and so forth, to really make it a win-win for everybody.
Hmm. Tom, I want to throw it back to you. We haven't talked about tariffs, but I that definitely pops up on the list. That number of small business owners I've talked to around the country are concerned about. They aren't able to negotiate prices like a larger company can. How concerned are you that we've got potentially more tariffs coming on Chinese products?
Well, we're very concerned. I mean, we've talked about a major headwind for small business, which is finding qualified and willing employees. We view a trade war as another one of those headwinds. Like you said, Heather, the small businesses don't have the luxury of looking 5 to 7 years out and cutting the contracts with suppliers. Small business owners are much more beholden to price changes. So they would like very much for the negotiations and the tariffs to lead to certainty and to trade deals. The longer this goes on, I think the worse off it is for small business.
Yeah, because they can't absorb those costs.
Correct.
Now, do you think they're going to start passing those costs along to consumers? Are you starting to hear people say, look, I can't afford to pay for higher costs for steel or aluminum. I'm going to need to charge more for my products?
Well, we were visiting with Tracy and Lori Tappany up in Minnesota a couple months ago, and they do a sheet metal fabricating. They're already passing along their costs to their customers, their supply chain. So it's already happening. Whether it's boiled down to the consumers, only the data will tell that. But the cost escalation is already happening, and we're pretty scared that that be a headwind that will detract from the growth that we're seeing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, to wrap it up, we've only got a few seconds, but Gary and Mallory, what's the best part about being a small business owner in Washington, D.C.?
You go first.
For us...
Other than good shoes, obviously.
Yeah. For us, as a company, we started out obviously very involved in the D.C. creative community. And one of our main goals was to represent underrepresented communities in the D.C. area that we knew were creative, talented, and deserved a shot. And so for us, when we work on a contract-based business, so project-wise, we get a project once a month or something like that, we try to bring in or source from the local D.C. community to add value to these projects. And so just last week, we wrapped up a huge project with YouTube where we were able to hire and source 20-plus DC creatives and entrepreneurs for this project. And so for us, that is the major thing, being able to uplift your community and give underrepresented communities opportunities like this to work with Fortune 500 companies. That's a huge benefit to us, and that's kind of where we hang our hat on.
Well, that's pretty inspiring. All right, Mallory, wrap us up.
You know, I think in DC, as a city, it's starting to experience a little bit more of a creative renaissance. So I think people in the area are really excited for new businesses. I'm lucky to be, my store is located in the Union Market District where there's a lot of up and coming businesses opening up. And you know, people are just thrilled to have local retail offerings. You know, I think on a larger level, I am able to support other businesses. I carry over 30 female-run jewelry brands in my store, and you know, I'm honored to be able to support them and you know, bring them into my store and offer them the opportunity for their work to be seen by other people. So that's pretty amazing that I can, you know, as a jewelry designer and now a store owner, it's I'm honored that you know I can help these people out as well.
Neat. Well, look out, New York and L.A. Yeah. D.C.'s coming with the creative stuff. Well, thank you so much for your insights today, and stay tuned for the healthcare panel next. Key topic.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. To hear more interviews from this series and other Washington Post Live programs, visit us at WashingtonPostLive.com.